From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, Jack the Ripper, 129 years later. Here's what's happening. Emergency workers rescued many more soaked and frightened people in southeast Texas as floodwaters continued to rise and officials counseled patients warning that conditions would not improve soon. The slow-moving, record-shattering Tropical Storm Harvey battered the region for a sixth straight day and began to move into southwest Louisiana now, with hundreds of thousands of people under evacuation, shelters filled to bursting with people who crave some news about safety of their loved ones and the state of their homes. For now, the city's focus will continue to be on rescuing and not on damage assessment, much less recovery, according to Houston's Mayor Sylvester Turner. Here's the latest. Local officials have reported 30 confirmed and suspected flood-related deaths, including a police officer. The mayor has imposed a citywide curfew from 12 a.m. to 5 a.m. until further notice. Parts of the Houston area set a record for rainfall from a single storm anywhere in the continental United States. The top reading since the storm began, get this, folks, almost 52 inches of rain. And President Trump visited Texas, arriving in Corpus Christi before traveling to Austin. What a tragedy. More rain expected through Friday. And devastating seasonal monsoon rains, flooding, and landslides in South Asia have killed there more than 1,200 people and affected nearly 41 million across northern India, southern Nepal, and northern Bangladesh. North Korea's missile launch on Tuesday was a prelude to more military operations directed at the U.S. territory of Guam, according to the North Korean state media. It fired an intermediate-range missile in Tuesday's test. Now, that missile's flight path took it right over Japan, further fueling tensions between North Korea, the United States, and its allies, Japan and South Korea. It's getting tense. Charles R. Smith, noted author and expert, has been telling us for some time now he does not expect military conflict. Charles, are you going to stick with that story so far?
Yes, I am. I suspect we may see some more tests. And the Hwasong-12 that was launched was exactly the right range for shooting at Guam. However, the North Koreans are pretty well aware that there are legal problems with trying to shoot down a ballistic missile flying over territory, but not directly aimed at it, in particular with the Japanese. The difference, though, of course, is shooting at missiles at Guam would probably not be viewed very nicely by the United States. I am told by good sources that there were U.S. and Japanese Aegis-armed warships in the region that could have intercepted the missile, but they opted not to because they noted that it was not going to land on Japanese territory itself.
And Charles, if we backed off from our war exercises with South Korea, would that lessen tensions out there?
Doubtful. They would still continue to conduct their operations. Right at the moment, what I think is having the most effect on North Korea, we just saw the United Nations unanimously come out against this test, as well as China made a very strong statement through their foreign minister, noting that this was not a helpful action by the North Koreans. The Chinese control the situation. Right now, they are still supplying oil to the North Korean military, and that is by treaty, probably a self-defense treaty that they signed with the North Koreans that has never been published. They could easily shut that off if they ever came around to our way of thinking.
How does this end, Charles?
Well, we probably will get a shot if they decide to drop one towards Guam or if one of their missiles, let's say if they tried to pop another one over Japan, fails and starts to come down short, that could be a problem for the North Koreans, because I suspect the Chinese would just completely pull their support altogether. So the next, perhaps, shooting stage would be to knock one of these birds out in flight.
We're going to have to show some strength pretty soon. Charles R. Smith, thank you, Charles. A Michigan woman has been sentenced to life in prison for the 2015 shooting death of her husband, and the man's pet parrot may have been the only witness to the murder. Now, a jury found Glenna Durham, 49 years old, guilty of fatally shooting her 46-year-old husband, Martin Durham, five times, including once in the head before turning the gun on herself in a failed suicide attempt. She suffered a head wound but survived. Christina Keller, Martin Durham's ex-wife, said that his pet parrot, Bud, mimicked some of his last words from the night of the murder. Following the shooting, Bud, the parrot, repeated, I can't mention this, by the way, it's an expletive deleted, but it went, don't blank shoot. And Martin Durham's voice sounded just like him, according to Keller. She said she believes the bird was replaying an exchange from the couple's final argument. Amazing story there. A Utah woman has been sentenced to prison for locking her 12-year-old son in a bathroom and starving him for more than a year. She's 36 years old. She received three consecutive sentences of 1 to 15 years in prison for child abuse. What is wrong with people? As we grow older, we suffer a decline in mental and physical fitness, which can be made worse by conditions like Alzheimer's disease. And according to a new study published in the open access journal Frontiers in Human Neuroscience, it shows that older people who routinely partake in physical exercise can reverse the signs of aging in the brain, and dancing, they say, has the most profound effect. Neil Slade, author of Tickle Your Amygdala, with us. Neil, why would dancing keep you kind of brain young?
Well, it's interesting. If you look at the study, the study specifically had people, and these were ages 60, about age, average age of 68. They were deliberately given constantly changing dance routines of different genres, where they had to move their arms and their steps, and they had to change them quickly in all of these routines. So what was happening is these people were made to learn things and adapt very quickly at a very rapid pace. And my study, as well as many other studies of the frontal lobes, show that learning new things makes use and accelerates the plasticity of the human brain. The idea that your brain can adapt to new challenges and situations is exactly what keeps it young. So that's why the dance routines, as opposed to just doing physical activity, was so much better for the brain.
Is that an amazing study, how people can do that?
Well, I think it's very interesting, because dancing, you know, as we've talked about many times before, music is something that engages all areas of the brain. It's one of the few things that engages all areas of the brain. So when you combine music with physical movement and the challenges of learning new things, it's like this whole package, and that's why this was like the best thing that they found to reverse aging in the elderly brain and to reverse the effects of things like Alzheimer's.
It's okay, Neil, thank you so much. We're going dancing to stay young, that's for sure. In a moment, L.A. Marzulli back with us. September 23rd could be an ominous day in prophecy and revelation, but why? We'll check in with L.A. in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. L.A. Marzulli back with us, one of our favorite guests. He's a noted author, lecturer, filmmaker. He has penned a number of books, including the Nephilim Trilogy, received an honorary doctorate for the series from the Pacific International University. He's lectured on the subjects of UFOs, the Nephilim, and ancient prophetic texts as well. I'll mention a little bit later on, but he's going to be a special guest on September 27th as our Coast to Coast Chatter with Richard Serrett, so make sure you're part of that. I'll let you know about that later. But September 23rd, of course, is going to be what they say an ominous date. L.A., welcome to the show, and of course your DVD Watchers series doing very well. But tell us about this date. What does it mean? What's the significance of September 23rd?
Well, George, it's always good to be here. Thanks for having me on. Basically, what's going on here are there are signs in the heavens, okay? This is called the Moedim, and these are appointed, there are appointed feast days. There are signs, and we're not talking astrology here. We're talking astronomy. There are 12 signs of the zodiac, actually Ophiuchus. The serpent holder is the 13th sign. And interestingly enough, we didn't hear about that till just a few years ago. So what's going on here is people have looked at the Revelation 12, specifically from the book of Revelation. They're looking at the sign, and I got to read it because if I don't read it, people won't understand it.
Okay.
A great sign was seen in heaven, a woman arrayed with the sun and the moon under her feet. So the woman is Virgo. And at this particular conjunction, on September 23rd, basically, she is arrayed with the sun, and the moon is under her feet. Upon her head was a crown of 12 stars, and she was with child, and she cried out, travailing in birth, and pain to be delivered. So let's just look at that. There's a couple of ways of interpreting that. If I went to a Catholic theologian, he would insist that the woman is Mary, for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
Now, not all Catholics will say that, but many of them will say, well, that must be Mary. But, of course, you know, many of us, while I respect that opinion, that's one opinion. I believe that the woman is none other than Israel, and the 12 stars above her are the 12 tribes of Israel. And she was with child. So let's see what it says. And there was another sign in heaven, and behold, a great red dragon having 7 heads, 10 horns, and upon his head 7 diadems. His tail drew a third of the part of the stars of heaven as it cast them to earth. The dragon stands before the woman that's about to be delivered, that when she delivered, he may devour the child. And she was delivered of a son, a man-child, who was to rule all the nations with a rod of iron, and her child was caught up unto God and to his throne. So, look, first of all, the book of Revelation is extremely complex. I mean, I've been studying this thing for like 37 years. And
it changes every time you look at it, doesn't
it? Well, I mean, there's definitely nuances. I adjust my thinking. It's a very, very complex book. To understand the book of Revelation, one has to go back into the Old Testament and look at the prophet Ezekiel and also the prophet Daniel, specifically Daniel, more than Ezekiel, has to really understand what was going on with Daniel in order to get a grasp on what's happening in the book of Revelation. But it's very complex. But yet it's also fairly straight ahead what I just said. The child, in my opinion, that the woman delivers, a man-child who was to rule the nations, that's none other than the Messiah. So that goes back into Jesus.
Okay.
And the child is caught up into God and his throne. And then it, like many prophecies, there's a short lens and a long lens. What I mean by that, as the prophet is talking and saying all this and writing it down, and by the way, this is almost a 2,000-year-old prophecy given to John the Beloved on the island of Patmos. So he is literally translated. He's caught up, and he hears all this stuff. An angel comes and tells him. I mean, he's flying through this other dimension. And I get it. Some people look at this stuff, and really, until the modern age, the book of Revelation was a closed, sealed book. People just avoided it for the most part.
Were they scared of it, L.A.?
It's just very complex.
Okay.
Very, very complex. And, I mean, look, I've been studying this thing for 37 years, and every time I go through it, I kind of glean something else or adjust my thinking slightly.
Well, tell me now the significance of the passage you just read.
According to certain YouTubers, specifically Scotty Clark, and I met Scotty at Hear the Watchman conference last weekend. We were up there for the eclipse, which was an incredible three-day event here at the Watchman Conference. A lot of speakers. It was just great. I took Scotty out to dinner. I got to know him. He's a great guy. And his presentation was stellar. And Scotty Clark has looked at the sign in basically the Maseroth? Is it what we're looking at, the Zodiac? And he's positing that, hey, everything seems to be lining up to September 23rd this year. And he makes some extremely valid points, in my opinion. He's done a lot of research. He's a good guy. I know him. I like him. End of story. However, that being said, the other side of the coin is no man knows the day or the hour. And now if Scotty were here, he would take issue with that. But I have to defer back to that scripture. And even though what we're looking at, where the zodiac signs is Virgo and the sun and the moon is at her feet, and this red dragon, by the way, has been literally redacted by NASA, by Google. When you go and you look at the constellation, there's a black, you know, redaction, a square, where this red dragon is right at her feet. But see, when I look at this, what I see is that this happened 2,000 years ago, because it talks about, you know, the dragon is there ready
right.
to devour her. And we know from the biblical prophetic narrative that after the Messiah was born, once Herod, and I've written about this extensively in my book, The Cosmic Chess Match, shameless plug, but once the Messiah was born, and once Herod found out about it, he sent his thugs out, and they killed every child from 2 years of age and younger.
The firstborn, right?
Exactly. Well, everybody from 2 years old, you know, on down was just absolutely massacred, which unfortunately fulfilled yet another prophecy. So the prophetic thread that we're reading here, again, it's very complex, and I tread extremely cautiously when I read this stuff. So even though there's some interesting signs in the heavens with the constellation Virgo and in Leo with the stars, and by the way, you know, you can go on, there's an astronomer, and I watched his video, and he talks about Leo, well, is it 9 stars, 10 stars, 12 stars, or 13 stars, depending on who you talk to. So it's like, what I would hold to is someone standing in Jerusalem 2,000 years ago, what could they see with the naked eye? And if there's 9 stars and these 3 wandering planets which come into Leo, which create the other, basically the 12 stars that crown Virgo's head. So everything seems to be pointing to September 23rd. But the problem I have with this is why, okay, we're getting some interesting signs in the zodiac. We've seen this before in other places throughout the years. And the fact that it's a date set goes against one of my fundamental beliefs, which is the doctrine of imminency, which basically states, and this goes back to the first century with a tome called the Didache, which was written around 100 AD. And the church fathers talked about the idea that the return of Jesus could happen at any time. In other words, it's not predicated on a particular event. It could have happened 500 years ago. It could happen by you and I are talking on the phone for crying
right,
out loud.
Right.
So there's nothing that has to happen for that rapture, harpazo, to be taken into the heavens, to actually concur. So what this has done, it's like Harold Camping, and I say this with all due respect to Scotty. And those,
no, he was the one a couple of years ago. Talked about the end times, the rapture, and
right.
a lot of people emptied their bank accounts and
right.
savings because they figured he's right, this is it.
And this is why I'm glad I'm on the show, because what we have to do is put this on the back burner and realize that we live in a tension. What I mean by that, the tension that we live in is, okay, something may happen, but I'm not going to stop doing what I do. And I'm not going to stop planning for the future. I'm not going to withdraw bank accounts, or I'm not going to not pay my mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to pretend, I'm just going to look at that I'm going to be here on September 24th. And if I'm not, then that's fine. So I put all this on the back burner, because we've been fooled by Harold Camping, who insisted that this was going to happen. And I remember in 1988, another guy called Edgar C. Wisenant came out with a book, 88 Reasons Why the Rapture Will Happen in 1988. And he sold hundreds of thousands of these things. And it was huge. And people, it's the same thing. We call it rapture fever. And nothing happened. And I've been through this before. And the problem is, what it does to Christians like myself is it makes us look like fools. And I'm here to tell
yes.
you that the vast amount of people that I've talked to in the last week, like Gary Stearman, like Bill Salas, just different people, theologians, and people that I've known over the years, and powwowed with them and talked about this thing, iron sharpens iron, and the idea that, look, could something happen on the 23rd? Yeah, but it could also happen tomorrow. So people need to just take a really, just take a deep breath and just kind of relax in this thing. Because in my opinion, no man knows the day or the hour. And by and with all due respect to Scotty, he is not saying, I want to state this emphatically, he is not saying, and I heard him say this with his own lips twice during his presentation, he's not stating that September 23rd will be the rapture.
All right, hold on, L.A. We'll come back and talk more about this incredible moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, along with L.A. Marzulli. We'll take your calls next hour with L.A. We're talking about September 23rd, a date that some say could be kind of ominous. L.A. says, don't worry too much. But we're going to get into rapture and other kinds of prophecy as well here as we chat with him. So, L.A., you know, and again, you've talked about how people can't talk about the dates. Tell me more about that September 23rd date.
Well, you know, on the 23rd, again, we're looking at the Revelation 12 sign, or what some people are saying could be the Revelation 12 sign. But I just, and I get it. A lot of things line up for that on some level. But, you know, to say that it's the day of the rapture, to me, it's just, I'm not buying it. I'm just not buying it. And again, I go back to the idea that no man knows the day or the hour. So even though that the planets are there and you know, she's clothed with the sun, and it's Israel. It's very clear when you read the book of Revelation what's going on. It's a man-child, and we all know what happens after that. What's interesting is right after that scripture, which I just read, it talks about, and this to me is absolutely profound. It talks about there's a war in heaven. Michael and his angels fight with the dragon, and the dragon warred with his angels, and it goes on from there. And this dragon, Satan, the devil, whatever you want to call him, is cast to heaven. Is that the day that we have full disclosure on the planet? I mean, I'm just saying. I mean, that's an unprecedented event which has never happened. And see, what I guess most people don't get, and I've been saying this a lot, pretty much, you know, as I travel and speak and whatever, we have no idea what this is and where we are in this, you know, on this little blue ball spinning through space. Nobody has any idea of what this really is and where we really are. And as a frank supernaturalist, I believe that we may be in some sort of like holographic type universe, which means when these entities interface with us, they have the ability to manipulate space, time, matter, and energy. So when we read stuff like this, war in heaven, Michael and his angels fight with the dragon, and they beat the dragon, and the dragon is cast down to earth, and it basically says, whoa, the inhabitants of the earth. And then it says something which is really enigmatic, in my opinion. It says that, woe to the inhabitants of the earth, because Satan, the dragon, has been cast down to you, and he knows his time is short. George, he can't get back. He's stuck here. And that is an unprecedented event that we've never seen in the history of this planet. He can't get back. He no longer has the ability to move into different dimensions.
L.A., tell us what you believe the rapture is.
Well,
and then let's talk into the, and then we'll bring the ET possibilities into it.
The rapture is a very, it's first of all, it's a supernatural event. It defies anything that the natural man could possibly think of. The mechanics of it get into quantum mechanics. We are looking at an event that is absolutely astounding, and yet, I don't think there's that many people that go with it, and I really mean that. You've got 1.8 billion Christians on the planet, but, you know, so-called Christians in name, and I'm not going to, you know, lay down what I think is the prerequisite. The Bible tells us that unless a person is born again and spirit-filled, they cannot inherit the kingdom of heaven, and that's like a three-hour discussion. The cliff notes of that is basically this. 37 years ago, I asked Jesus into my heart. I had no idea what I was doing when I did that. I just said, look, I don't know whether you're real or not, but come into my life. And he came into my life, and everything began to change. And I spent a lot of time in what I call the forge of the living God, where you're heated up, you're placed on the anvil, and you're basically pounded into a new shape. That process takes years. And that's what he does, and he does it to men and women. But that's what being born again in spirit filled is. There's also something called the sin code, which every person on this planet has. And all we have to do is look at what's going on in Houston to realize that the sin code is in full operation as price gouging, $99 for a case of water, $10 for gasoline, looting, the whole deal. The criminal element, and that's the sin code in all of its, in all of its glory. The sin code raises its ugly head. So being born again and spirit-filled, that's the prerequisite. So out of that 1.8 billion Christians, how many people are really looking for this? How many people are born again and spirit-filled? I don't think it's, I don't think it's a billion. I don't think it's 500 million. I think it's a lot less. So that begins to cut down the population on the planet. The bottom line is this, that we are told that, behold, I tell you a mystery. We shall not all of us will die, but we'll be changed at the last trump. The dead in Christ will rise first. And we who are alive will rise and meet the Lord in the air. And when we read that, it sounds, it's beyond science fiction. I get it. It is absolutely one of the wackiest things you can possibly imagine. But this is the problem. Most people have a very truncated view of the God of the universe. And they go, well, how's that going to happen, L.A.? And interestingly enough, the whole other side of the aisle, a lot of the New Agers and channelers have been talking about this. For decades, I've heard this. Even before I was a Christian, for decades I heard that the aliens are going to come and take people off the planet. I mean, I've heard this over and over and over again. So it's on both sides of the aisle. But we're looking at a supernatural event, and let me just say this. I'll close this little thing by saying this, that there is precedent of it. We have in the scripture, and this is wacky stuff, I get it.
Sure.
But it's supernatural, and I'm a frank supernaturalist. So this guy, Philip, is down in this one area, and he runs into this guy, and the guy's in Ethiopia, he's on his chariot, he's reading the book of Isaiah, but he's not sure what to do. And the Spirit of the Living God says, hey, go over and tell the Ethiopian what he's reading. So, Philip goes over, and he goes, hey, what are you reading? And the Ethiopian goes, I'm reading Isaiah, but I don't understand what I'm reading. And he's at the 53rd chapter of Isaiah, which talks about Messiah, in my opinion. And so Philip explains all of this thing. The Ethiopian goes, this is great. I want to get baptized. And he accepts Jesus as his Savior. They go down. They get baptized. And this is where it gets weird. All of a sudden, Philip is translated from one place to the other in an instant. He finds himself, right after this event, he's taken by the Spirit and placed in another city. There's one more example I want to give. Jesus is in a boat with his disciples. There's a storm going on. He's asleep. They wake him up, and he goes, okay, storm, peace be still. The storm is still. And then it's just one of these little bywords in the Bible, which absolutely drives me nuts, by the way, because it says, and instantly they found themselves at their destination. In other words, what happened was he went through time and space. He time traveled.
Yeah,
there's no way around it.
Or teleported, or
he
something.
Teleported from one area to another area instantaneously. That's what's going on here, and it's like with the rapture, it's the same thing. Somehow we're all going to get beamed up, and I'm not talking Star Trek here. There are some mechanics involved, and I have no idea of what those mechanics are. I can only speculate, but I believe it's supernatural. I believe he's going to call us up, and I believe that event is future, and I'm not going to date set. On the 23rd, it could happen tomorrow. So people have to realize that, hey, the 24th most likely will occur. And when it does, don't go banging Scotty Clark. He's just looking at this information. He's throwing it out there. Look at it, digest it, and do with it what you will. Put it, as I say, put it on the back burner, and and see what happens.
If Hurricane Harvey had hit Texas on September 23rd, would you have said, uh-huh? There's something.
Well, I would say that now, only because we are in the window of time. And you and I discussed this before.
Yeah.
We are in the window of time that I call the birth pangs. And that's, there's a punch list. Wars and rumors of war, famines, pestilence, earthquakes in diverse places, troublesome times. You look at the volcanic activity in Yellowstone and other places, everything is on the rise. Same thing with the earthquakes. Everything is absolutely through the roof. Record droughts, record rainfalls, snowstorms. I mean, it's something is going on. It's not normal, and yet most people don't want to talk about it. So, I think that Harvey is just another of the many signs that we've had, indicating that we're ramping up towards a climax. Remember, all these signs are the birth pangs, And what is that birth? It births the time of Jacob's trouble, called the Great Tribulation, a seven-year period. And I truly believe that those of us who are looking for our blessed hope, i.e. the rapture, will not be here. Because it's the time of Jacob's trouble, and it's the wrath of the Almighty that's poured out upon this system, which I call basically the Antichrist system, which we're already seeing in operation in many quarters around the world.
Why do you think it's dangerous to try to set a timing of the rapture?
Well, because we see what it did with Harold Camping. It does two things. It gets
people... And by the way, I think he's dead now, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. He passed away shortly after the prophecy, the false prophecy, didn't come.
Yeah, he was like 90 or something.
Yeah. With all due respect to Harold, I mean, what it does is it gets the young Christian who knows about this but hasn't really studied it. It gets everybody all excited, and they start to go, wow, you know, we're going to be out of here, and this is going to be great. And it's called rapture fever. And then when it doesn't happen, these people who are waiting expectantly, now what do I do? And so it's like it's this huge high, and then all of a sudden, boom, people crash. And it's just, I think the way to look at this is interesting. Put it on the back burner. Go about my business. And, you know, I don't know the day or the hour. And if people that are looking at this, if it's right, then it doesn't matter. I'm out of here. And if it doesn't happen on the 24th, and I wake up on the 24th, I haven't lost anything, because I'm always prepared, George. I mean, I live with that expectation every day. I wonder every day. And I lead my life in the tension of, okay, I could be raptured tomorrow, but I have to plan for my retirement and my child's education, and I got to pay the mortgage and on September. So I live in the tension, and I embrace the tension.
Would you call it a supernatural event, if and when?
Absolutely. Absolutely a supernatural event, unlike anything else we've ever experienced.
When we had the solar eclipse a week ago, did that have any significance to any of this?
A lot of people who were there, and I, you know, we were there.
It was emotional.
Yeah, it was very emotional. I mean, I interviewed my friend Paul Bagley. He was up here yesterday, and he said it was profound. With the total eclipse, everything, it dropped 20 degrees, it got dark, the birds stopped chirping, insects, I mean, everything was just like...
It was weird. It was surreal.
Weird. And, you know...
And then you see this gorgeous moon in front of the sun. It was a sight to behold. It really was.
You know, I think it's another sign, and what's interesting is that 7 years from now, it appears again over the United States, which creates an X, and people look at that and they speculate, you know, does this mean that America is divided? All I know that America is more divided now than I've ever seen it before. So, we can look at the eclipse and we wonder, you know, is it a portent? Does it talk about, you know, the division of the let's say the USA dividing up into different nations? I mean, California is talking about secession. I mean, I read something today, you know, Dixie exit. You know, some of the southern states. I mean, it's there. It's I've never seen.
I don't think it'll happen, but it's a possibility.
I don't think it will either, but it's alarming. Very alarming.
Yeah, it is. I'm not as religious as you, LA, but I'm a believer. I'm extremely spiritual. Again, when you look at events like the solar eclipse, this isn't chance. This isn't just some mix-up of some physics. There's something behind it. There's no question in my mind that there's something behind it of intelligence that just put all this together. And I mean, the pieces of the puzzle just on this planet are all too perfect. I mean, food grows for people to eat. I mean, everything's connected, isn't it?
Yeah. It's, I mean, where we live and the fact that all this is placed here, just the fact that as human beings, we're in these shells, and they're incredible. For the most part, they work really well.
If you take care of it.
It's incredible. I mean, I can go about and do all sorts of incredible things, but we're like in a matrix. What most people don't realize is no one knows what this is and where we are. I've said it again, which is really, it's absolutely profound, because we don't know. Nobody knows what this is. And all I know is when I read the guidebook of the supernatural, i.e. the Bible, and it talks about this heavenly war, which is going to happen in the future. But we're in this war already, and we're this planet is ruled by this incredible, nefarious, malevolent character called Satan. I mean, it is. All one needs to do is turn on the 6 o'clock news and see the nonsense. I heard you at the break talk about, you know, the woman who locked her kid in for
a year.
I mean, that's the most insane thing I've ever heard in my life.
I particularly like the story about the parrot that
that's unbelievable.
Got that lady put away. But you're right. I mean, it's a very strange time. But is it not true that every culture, every civilization thought they were in end times?
Well, and this is why we've got to be cautious. And it's like, okay, what for me, the main sign, and how this points back to Hal Lindsey, one of the main signs that we're actually in the last days is the regathering of Israel back into its ancient homeland. You go back 150 years ago, people would laugh at that. They would say, well, that's never going to happen. The Bible's got to be false. That's just never going to happen. And that's where the whole, you know, amillennial camp, which just never believed in any of this stuff, was going to happen. All of a sudden, you know, and people can argue this, and they'll say they're not the real Jews, and I mean, it just gets really crazy. But I want to avoid that and just get back to the fact that the Jews were regathered into their ancient homeland, and the nation was born in a day, which fulfills a bunch of different prophecies.
It did happen, 1948, right?
Right, and that starts the prophetic clock ticking. That's it. See, what people don't realize, we're in the birth pains, which give birth to the time of Jacob's trouble. It's not the time of Bob's trouble. It's not about the Gentiles of the church. It's the seven-year period where God deals with Israel again. And that's why the Virgo is Israel, the 12 stars of the 12 tribes. The man-child is the Messiah, which comes forth. But he's caught up, and we know that. He's already caught up. And then the war happens. So we've got to read it sequentially. So the next thing, really, in my opinion, is the war in heaven. That's the next thing for us to look at. I mean, at some point, and this happens, of course, after the church or the people are raptured out of here. So it's very complex, and, you know, like, we're just chatting here for like an hour and stuff. We'll take some phone calls, whatever. It's a very deep and complex subject.
It is.
And certainly, you know, I hope I'm doing it justice, explaining it sort of in a Cliff Notes way. But it's very complex, it's very deep, and it's all dealing with the supernatural. But what's amazing about it, it's written not priori. It's written in advance, and it's done so with great specificity, which I find incredible.
Do you think the Catholic Church, the Vatican, has scholars set aside studying exactly what you've been talking about?
Well, there's an element in the Catholic Church that look at this in that way. But it's very far and few between. For the most part, the Catholic eschatology, the study of the end times, does not jibe with, let's say, the evangelical.
Really?
Yeah, it doesn't. They have a completely. For instance, this is why for the most part, Catholics do not recognize Israel, and they will. This is where replacement theology comes in. It's also called supersessionism, where the idea that the church now supplants Israel,
huh.
And nothing could be further than the truth. They are two completely separate identities, and what this confuses a lot of people. The church is the church, and Israel is Israel. They're two separate identities, completely different. And prophecies that are directed only to the church are just for the church, and prophecies that are directed to Israel are directed only to Israel. And where people get in trouble is when they start to mix the two. And some of that is what we're seeing here in the Revelation 12 prophecy. It's about Israel. It's not about the church, in my opinion.
L.A., when we come back after the top of the hour and take phone calls, I do want to ask you about the church believing in exorcisms because they must believe in evil. And I want to get your take on that. L.A. Marzulli with us here. One more hour to go. We're going to open up the phone lines as we talk about September 23rd, biblical prophecy, and your calls on Coast to Coast AM.